accession with 32327, Rule 2.
You mentioned before that you had suffered paralysis.
Yeah.
And you also previously mentioned that the Japanese had taken you to hospital when you had the injuries from being in the jungle. When you were in camp, were you ill? Let's take aside from the paralysis. Did you, you've mentioned bouts of malaria. Did, were you ill with malaria?
Oh yes, we were ill. For instance, I never worked on my birthday. We had some sort of a calendar and I'd take it across the right day, but I never worked. I was Byoki that day, and Byoki means you're not well. So, right, you see a doctor, nothing to give you, but...
Would this be a Japanese doctor?
Oh yes,
or
could be an American. There was one American with us. He tried his best. He couldn't speak Japanese. But he was in Japan on his... He was a Japanese, but he was in... brought up in America. He was in Japan on his holidays when the war broke out and he didn't go back. Right. But he couldn't speak Japanese. But he tried always to get a couple of days off. Say work 3 or 4 days and get a day off. In the 10. No, that didn't work, no. Well, there weren't enough of us anyway.
Going back to this medical issue, you said there was nothing to treat you with. So did your doctors in the camp have no medicines or anything that
no,
if you...
No.
So you just had to cope as best you could?
Yes, and there was a sick bay on it was a finishing hospital, as a matter of fact.
Who looked after you in sick bay?
There were some restaurant chappies, but in my instance, he was one of us, and which took pity on us. Because whilst I was paralysed, there were no conveniences. And as you know, the Japanese floor is so much high off the floor. And that came in very handy with some bucket and he couldn't carry me. He was too weak himself. So he laid me on the front, then he pulled me by my feet onto the edge and put me on the bucket and so on. And the same return, a return journey, dragged along the floor. Mm-hmm. To what was bed, it was on the floor, of course.
Yes.
And eventually, I couldn't feed myself even. And then, but eventually, I shouted to Albus, "I can move my toes," I said. He said, "Move him, please, Albus, and get out of there." Right. Anyway, eventually I came. And within 3 weeks, I was back down the pit.
So the paralysis had taken the form.
The spinal cord had been damaged on the top on the neck.
So you lost the use of your arms and
your
legs.
Yes, completely.
So they had to feed you and look after everything because you couldn't.
Yes.
And this lasted a year.
Yes, nearly.
Nearly a year. Now if I could ask you about the end of your captivity and repatriation. What process did you personally go through? How long, for instance, after the end of the war was your camp liberated? How long did you wait?
Well, it seemed long, but it wasn't, I suppose, probably 3 weeks for a month. But in the meantime, Harry and I were, and Yamamoto, we were out, and he wanted to try and learn a bit of English, so he was always with somebody that would speak English with him, and Two fighter planes came over. And turned around to my colleague and I said that they were like British. I said they were head to tail. And they were dropping leaflets anyway. And following that, supplies came through. And they were dropping these supplies. And I spoke quite a bit of Japanese in the end. I could converse. I could make myself known for the sake of the voice. If they were doing something wrong, well, I mean, there was no need to go and thump them and push them about, bless them. And anyway, they were dropping these supplies in big oil tanker, two oil tanks welded together, full of goodies. And of course they used to drop in the houses. And I had a job going around these houses in Japan, see if there was any damage. And this particular morning I went into the, I could hear some howling in this house. And I went in, and there's a woman given confinement. Well, right. I said, "Nay, I can help." And I tried to help her. And a little chappy, little boy, he came, right, all right. And anyway, with the boys in Japan, when they're born, they're dipped in a tub of cold water. And I was told to do that by the little lady. And I gave him a little wash and dipped him in. Well, his mouth was open wide and he was howling away. And I took him back. And anyway, she was very, very thankful. It was arigato all the way. And anyway, but there was no damage to the house. But these things. But we lost two. They ate too much.
Two POW.
Two men. Two comrades. Eating too much. I made. I had a tin of stew steak, 12-ounce tin, and I mixed it with a bowl of rice, and then I had a tin of peaches afterwards, and cream. Wow, and anyway, I survived.
But that sort of food must have been quite a shock to your system.
Absolutely.
Yeah. You must have had to be careful.
Yeah, yes. And then, of course, when we boarded ship coming home, we crossed Canada. Well, we came from.
Let me just stop you and ask you there. In that 3 weeks that you were going around the neighbourhood,
yeah,
and you came across this woman in confinement, what were the local people, what was their attitude towards you like? Were they afraid of the prisoners? Did they know you were there?
No, they weren't afraid. Yes, they saw us every day, marching up and down. And we never left camp without guard in front and guard in the back, fixed bayonet. But even though we used to manage to get into a shrine and there was bits of rice and something left there for the from to go over the other side, and we used to pinch that on our way. Still it was,
So when the Americans arrived, did they, to liberate your camp?
Yeah.
What did you do? What was the process you went through, leaving camp and making your way home? Can you describe that to me?
Well, that was, I would say, well, quite simple. We waited. I suppose we were waiting for trains more than anything, because we went from where we were. We were near Kobe, was it? Which wasn't very far from Tokyo anyway. Mm-hmm. and Hiroshima was quite near him.
Right.
Yeah. And the blast of the atom bomb knocked the three of us out, Yamamoto, with Harry and I, that day too.
So let's talk about that then. On the day of the dropping of the bomb on Hiroshima,
yes,
what were you doing?
We were waiting for Rivali, and it never came. And, of course, it dropped about 7:30 in the morning. And we never went down a pit that day. And that was the end, really. And there were, the guards were in the guard room crying. And we wanted supplies, and I went down to, well, I was detailed to go down because I spoke a little Japanese. And whilst I was recuperating after the been paralysed, the I went down to the stores regularly to fetch, and of course the girls in the stores knew me. And as number 19, Joe Kubang. And this particular day, Mr. Trillwood asked me to go down, and I went, and got, and this girl shouted, "You Kubang, sense us unta." I said, "Nanny, oh, yesterday." And she went on, and they were going to sign on the Missouri. We didn't know what the Missouri was, of course. Never heard of it. And I went back. War was ended, she said. And they were going to sign on the Missouri. Right. I went back and I told Mr. Tillman, "Are you going to the guard room?" I said, "Ryan went." And, he said he wasn't going. So I went and I stood outside the guard room, and if you had a cap on, you saluted. If you didn't, you bowed. And I bowed, and sergeant came out, and I said, "Sensor sunda kaste kutasai. Sensor sunda kutasai," he said to me, and he was crying. The war was over. So I went back and told him, well, there was a rife there then. And of course, they made for the what was in the guard room. And when I attacked them, in the state we were, and anyway, he stopped us on that anyway, and that particular afternoon they disappeared. We never saw them anymore.
Now that would have been a few days after Hiroshima.
That's right.
So on the day of the dropping of the bomb on Hiroshima, were you outside when that happened?
Yes, we watched the plane come over, and I told Yamamoto, "Kia wa shashin, asta taksan bomb bombs." "No," he said. "So we're taking shashin today, taking photographs, and there'd be 3 days before we were bombing by camp. The next thing, there was a blast, and the blast knocked us down. And when we got up, there was this big white mushroom going up. And, of course, we thought it was an ammunition dump. We'd heard of the atom bomb, but they split it in 1932. But that's about all. And that was the end of the war, really, for us.
Right. So?
So we paid for ourselves afterwards. There were no guards, and then...
And the local population left you alone?
Oh,
they
yes,
didn't harass
yes,
you
yes,
at all?
Yes, yes.
And generally, would you say the men were well-behaved? Were the people looking for revenge or retribution?
Oh, yes. There was... one would overstep it. But I've always maintained, and I'm still going to say it, that if we want a better world, we've got to learn to forgive. And it's no use even today, blaming the present generation of their father's misdoings. I mean, we call ourselves Christians, but we must act a little like Christians. As a matter of fact, one particular morning, I was going, this was years after, when I was working in Bangor, and I was going to San Ditno to fetch my cousin. She was from Liverpool, and she was going to stay, spend the day with me. And there were two young ladies thumbing a lift in there. So anyway, I reversed back. I was going along the coast road, but evidently they wanted, they were going along the A5 to Bethesda, heading for Cambridge, as a matter of fact. And when I looked about one, I thought, oh my God, I said, where do you come from? Japan, is it? Oh, lovely. perfect English. And it wasn't a lift they wanted, but they wanted a cafe. Well, I said, you'll get nothing this side of Bethesda, and it's early morning. I said, I don't suppose there'll be anything open there. But I said, I live on my own. I said, if you wish to come, I've got a maisonette. If you wish to come, I'll find something for you to eat and drink. And a very good start when we got to the house. Tea or coffee? One wanted coffee, and the other wanted tea. So, right. And I had, I made them some sandwiches. And that's it. And I asked them, where are the Christians? Oh, yes. And where do you come from? Tokyo. I said, who's your minister? Desaisha. He's got a book called Desaisha. He was a prisoner with us, and he told me many, many a time that he'd come back as a missionary. Mm-hmm. And you could both go to the same service, same chapel. Yes and no. One went to the first service and the other one to the second service. There was 1,000 members. So, I knew Desaisha very well. And he's passed on, of course, by now.
Now, you said that you went, you left Japan from Kobe, was it? Did you leave Motoyama? How did you leave the islands of Japan? Which port did you leave through?
Kobe? No, not Kobe. We went by train to one of the islands outside Japan where they were bombing from.
Something like Okinawa.
Okinawa. I think it was Okinawa.
So did you actually see Hiroshima?
Yeah.
Yourself?
Went past it, yes.
You went through Hiroshima?
Yeah. Yeah.
And saw the devastation for yourself?
Yes. The only thing you've mentioned devastation. It was devastation. But there was one thing, and it was a bridge, a silhouette of a bridge, and what we called Benjo cart. They were going on emptying the toilets. And you could see quite plain the bridge and this animal and cart. Just a silhouette of it. It was amazing, really.
Right.
Whether I don't know whether it was the blast or whether, I mean, we put the windows of the train down, naturally, to see and go up and inhale as much as we could, I suppose. And eventually that's why I was radioactive.
You were affected by the exposure to radiation.
Yes.
And how did that represent itself? How did that manifest itself? Did you become sick?
One thing in particular, I managed otherwise fairly well, but watching television, colour television particularly, it would knock me off completely. I wouldn't know what day it was for days.
So that's a fairly recent problem that you've had in the onset of colour television.
1990.
You found that you had this reaction to the pro. And has that got any easier?
Yes, I can watch. Yeah. I went to Rorton in Swindon, an RAF hospital, and we went for a check-up actually. They called the Far Eastern Prisoners of War if they wanted to go for a check-up, and there was a chappie from Bristol and I together. And he reckoned he didn't see very well, and he had me pushing him in the wheelchair about, and we were in the mixed ward, and they knew a young RAF police, I suppose he was about 20, and she asked a miniskirt, and Chappie shouted to me, "Look at this," he said. "I thought you were blind. I said, going to stare at that." I said, you'd be totally blind."
Brilliant.
That was fairly recently you went for that checkup. Would it be?
91.
Yeah.
So let me just go back to this process of leaving Japan behind.
Yeah.
The Americans, were they responsible for repatriation?
Yes, mostly.
How did you find that process?
Oh, no trouble at all. Shall we say we'd mellowed? And we were so very glad that we had been, well, I was anyway, that we'd been released. But my worry was, how were they at home? I'd left my mother and father and one brother. And he was in the forces, but he never left his country, fortunately. And
where was home? Where was home? Where were your mother and father?
Near Mold? Yes. Outside the loggerheads.
So had you not heard from them at all whilst you were a prisoner?
No. I had some cards from this cousin I fetched from Llandudno. She was working in an office in Liverpool, and she used to... Those cards, they didn't mean an awful lot. They were typed anyway. And because a friend of mine from Ruthie, he was missing, and he returned. And he'd lost his sister and mother and father, and the family were trying to swindle the will, if you please.
Let me just picture. You've left Japan from which port? Which port did you end up?
Motoyama. Good, that's port of...
So you left the camp, and when you were repatriated, you went from Motoyama.
We went to Tokyo.
To Tokyo.
Tokyo for checkups, and you see, that's where my trouble first started, really. X-rays wouldn't take.
Right.
And they couldn't pin it. And another thing I would like to mention, now the atom bomb has come, well, it's a daily word really, isn't it? The atom, I mean. No, not the atom, the atomic power stations. And we were told in Japan, if we were married, not to have any children. And if you weren't, don't consider if you do get married. And three friends of mine did have, which I was in contact with, they had a child each. They lost them when they were 13 with
plastic anemia.
Plastic anemia, they called it. Cancer. So, and yet to turn around and tell you, oh no, There's no danger in these power stations. And we're living right close to one out. Still, hurry up.